Looking for a way to level up your coaching and win more? Get better fast with GMS Plus. GMS Plus is your on-demand source for the best, most proven volleyball courses, drills, stats, videos, tips, and much more. Learn from some of the game's winningest coaches and players, including Heather Olmstead, Keegan Cook, John Spraw, Mike Wall, and Courtney Thompson. I've learned a great deal from Gold Medal Squared, as have many of our guests. Whether you're trying to win a state championship or an Olympic gold medal, GMS Plus will help you get there. And we have a Coach Your Brains Out code for listeners. To get 20% off an annual subscription, go to goldmedalsquared.com/CYBO and enter the code CYBO. That's goldmedalsquared.com/CYBO. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Big news here at Coach Your Brains Out. The founder and CEO of this very podcast has just released a brand new book called The Inner Knight, Train and Compete Like a Champion. Congrats, Billy. What can you tell us about this new book?
Thanks, John. Well, for the listeners, a little history on the book. It wouldn't have been written if John hadn't been prodding me for quite some time. I definitely would have written something else. So John, at the end, there was times when I resented you, but with the finished product, I'm happy. You forced me to do it.
I wouldn't give me too much credit. It's not that hard to say, hey, Billy, write a book. You had to actually write it.
Yeah. Well, I think we're calling it a parable, but the book is, so it's centered around like lessons on practice and competing and coaching, but it's told through a fictional story of a medieval knight preparing for a jousting tournament.
Yeah. And I've been lucky to read an early edition of the book, actually a couple editions, and really, really loved it. And I'm excited for people to get to read it. I think it's going to make a big impact. But who do you see as the main audience for this book?
I think I wrote it for athletes, first and foremost, players who are going through what the main character is going through. Their training, encountering some of the same struggles, some of the same feelings as the main character in the book. But I think it's also a good book for coaches. There's a lot of coaching concepts we've woven throughout. And one of the main characters is a mentor figure. And I think just he exemplifies what I think I appreciate in coaches. And I think that what he does is great. And so I think going in, knowing it is a fictional book, there are coaching principles written and throughout, but you have to be go in knowing it's going to be a read of a good story more than a textbook.
So age range, age 13 to 99, or what do you see the lower end? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah. There's like some action in it, and you know, jousting can be brutal. So I would say junior high and on. But I mean, Harry Potter's got some pretty rough stuff too.
That's true. And what did teaching through a fictional story open up? You know, versus our Coach Your Brains Out book, which maybe is a little more reference and, I don't know, it's not textbooky, but just doesn't have this fictional element. So I guess what did doing, bringing together your two worlds of writing fantasy books and writing about coaching, you brought them two together. So what did fiction create writing it this way?
It created a lot of problems for me. I think the hardest part of the book was balancing story with some of the lessons. And it would have been a lot easier just to write a bunch of rules and coaching principles. But I thought some of the things that fiction does that, we couldn't really do in Coach Your Brains Out is it really brings the examples to life. So beyond just stating principles, by painting a scene and seeing some of the back and forth between the coach and the player, I thought it really brought out some of that stuff. And then a lot of the book is about the mental game. And so in fiction, just being able to get into the character's head, I think opened up a lot of that, because I've read a lot of books on like mental toughness, and as an athlete, I don't get a lot out of resilience is important, and great athletes bounce back. But just to because that sounds great, but it's really hard to do, and I don't know how practical that sentence is. But just seeing maybe the thought process of an athlete struggling and some of the tools that she uses, I think are helpful. And at the end of the day, like hopefully wrapping some of these lessons in a good story will make them be remembered.
Yeah, and we have an episode, Jamie Morrison, talking about the value of using stories in your teaching. So I think this will pair well with it. So you mentioned, using this narrative, to really bring you inside the athlete and get her perspective, and it helps teach the mental skills. I'm curious, is there any biographical moments, anything you pulled from, you know, your long professional or and collegiate career that that will show up in the book?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing would be, I guess, just what it feels like to be in competition. The feeling of, I guess, being bombarded by a lot of distractions. And then, you know, whatever self-talk I've tried to use biographically, I think, you know, like the character tries to use, and just, you know, sometimes it goes over well, sometimes it doesn't. I found that there are moments I've been playing, especially since doing the podcast and coaching a lot, that I'll be in the heat of battle and I'll be able to detach and like identify things, but it's not so easy to change. So I'll be like, oh, I realize I'm in a threat state. I should breathe and focus on the next play, but it doesn't just click like that. And so I think maybe biographically it captures some of the messiness. And then for the practice sessions, I guess as a coach, just some of my own experience there and dealing with a player, maybe a player who's struggling or kind of reluctant to try some of the stuff, how to give effective feedback. I definitely think that's biographical too.
Yeah, I think that's what really brings it alive. It feels like, you know, she feels realistic. And I think sometimes you read these sorts of books, especially on the fiction side, where it's like, yeah, that's not really what it's like. So I think that's what you did a really good job of, like, oh, this is what an athlete actually goes through. And I think people will really connect with that. So the you mentioned the coach, and not maybe not a traditional coach, maybe more of a coach your brains out sort of coach. You know, other than of course me, who would be maybe some of the influences?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the coaches that I've had on the podcast, I hear kind of some of their philosophies, but I don't get to see like the day to day what it looks like in practice. So I think the coaches that I've been around, you, Tom Black, a little bit. I think, you know, coaches that guide more than just kind of instruct or yell. So he's quiet. He, you know, when he speaks, hopefully it's meaningful. He really balances compassion and patience with challenging. You know, he has a lot of autonomy for the player. It's definitely her journey, not his. And so it's not all about him. And I think, you know, those are a lot of things that I've heard echoed throughout the years of doing Coach Your Brains Out from the coach. And then I just tried to, like, you know, combine it and kind of paint maybe not an idealized coach, because I think Gowan has his own issues and struggles, and he's definitely not perfect. And I think, you know, he models some of his own mistakes. But yeah, I wanted to give maybe an alternative movie coach. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking you were going to say Mr. Miyagi, mm-hmm. but I guess he's not the movie coach.
I think Mr. Miyagi is not the movie coach either. I don't think he gives a big halftime speech.
He isn't the traditional. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. I think he teaches in analogies and
storytelling. Agree. Yeah. I mean, I know how much that movie had an influence on you. I think it's why you went to Northridge, right?
That's right. Because The Karate Kid was filmed in our gym. No, I think like that's another reason, I guess, to do this book is fiction. You know, stories have had a big impact on my life, and I'm definitely influenced by what I've seen. And, you know, Karate Kid, no matter how many times I've seen it or how long it's been since I've seen it, has stuck with me. And hopefully we can paint a similar thing for our readers.
Yeah. So how come jousting? Why was that the sport that you wanted to tell this story through?
Yeah, I know you were a little dubious when I mentioned that jousting was what I was thinking. I think practically, I wanted something that wasn't a modern sport. Like, I could have done volleyball, but then maybe if you're a baseball player, that's kind of a turnoff. I don't want to read a book about volleyball where something
set, girl sport.
Yeah. Something set in the past. And it felt a little more like archetypal, or like it's more of an obvious metaphor. So it's hopefully it was a little more universal, even though obviously nobody jousts. But at the same time, I wanted there to be skills involved and like rules so that it was more of a sport. So something like sword fighting was going to be a little hard to do, where jousting, I was able to craft kind of some rules and make it like a tournament. So it felt more like applicable to an athlete today. And yeah, I thought it was also exciting.
And how accurate are the references? And did you do any real world, you know, jousting to, you know, make sure you really understood it?
I watched A Knight's Tale.
Okay.
I did some research. That was actually fun diving in that. And on my first draft, I used a lot more jargon. But at the end, I simplified a lot of it for the audience and for the reader, while keeping, you know, enough to kind of paint the picture with some details and make it seem authentic. Luckily for me, there are no real set rules or equipment used. It kind of varied location and time. So I was free to use what worked best for the story. But at the end of the day, I'm like, as tough as jousting was as a choice, I'm happy. And I think the lessons translate.
Yeah, no, I think it worked really well. You proved me wrong once again. So you mentioned she a couple times, the female lead character. What was her name again?
Meridian K.
Meridian, that's right.
Yeah.
So why she? Why a female lead character?
I mean, why not? Fair enough. I think I guess the big reason was, you know, you want to give your hero a lot of obstacles, and you want the character to be having some struggles to get through. And, you know, the tournament itself, this tournament of champions that she's training for, would be hard enough already, but because she's a woman and she's kind of forbidden to be there in the first place, I thought that would add some drama, and her trying to like navigate the stress of hiding her own identity along with competing, just kind of made it for a better story, I thought. And I guess on a more practical level, a lot of our audience is volleyball. And so I thought, you know, if you can convince your LMU girls to read this over the summer, I've already sold a few books.
There you go. It's going to be required reading for sure. Yeah. So tell me about it. You mentioned a little bit the podcast, how it was influential. Is there any episodes or guests that you pulled from, you know, especially, you know, obviously not on the jousting side, but on the coaching side?
Yeah. I mean, there's no way, kind of like our last book, Coach Your Brains Out, there's no way I write this book if we weren't doing our podcast. The Bernie Holiday episode, where he talks about the training and trusting mindsets, was the kind of the influence for writing the book in the first place. At first, the whole book was going to be designed around that concept only. And then as I was writing, I kind of just wanted to throw in more and more things that I thought would help athletes that have helped me. And, you know, there are lessons through so many of our podcasts and our guests that I wanted to cram in there, but I had to kind of find, you know, what worked best. Peter Haberle was on our podcast twice, I think, and his stuff on the mental side, on mindfulness, was a huge part of the book. Cece Kraft was on there. She told a story about the 3-foot world that I basically, you know, retold in the story within the book. So yeah, I mean, the influence was everywhere, not only in the story, but, you know, how I think. So by naturally, like, if I'm talking about coaching and competition, like naturally all our lessons from the podcast will factor in.
So you mentioned you had to cut some of the jousting fantasy side. What were some of the cuts you had to make on the sports psych side?
So I know I was lucky enough to have, after I wrote it, like I wrote a lot from my own experience, from the lessons I've learned from the podcast. And then I actually was able to send it to Bernie Holiday and Peter Haberle, who were obviously huge influences on the book, and have them read it and go through it. They were both very complimentary. They maybe offered a few tweaks as far as the mental stuff, more just in the language, how to make it a little more accurate. For instance, I think at one point I had Meridian talking with some self-talk, just reminding herself, hey, be fearless. And Peter kind of said, well, that's not really mindfulness, because that's trying to, you know, control a feeling or a state, where, you know, we control our actions. And so we just made the tweak to change it to act fearless. Because again, she can't maybe control her, if she's fearing or not. And she's in a position in a jousting tournament where her life's on the line. So it's natural to have some fear, but she can still, you know, act fearless and control what she does. And so little things like that, I thought really helped. I mean, there's so much you want to cram into a book. But it's really important, I think, to have a clear focus and, you know, make it short and digestible.
I feel like I've done a poor job. I'm just realizing in this interview, that I didn't just pump up enough. This book is awesome. Like I loved the book, and I think I loved it as just reading it as a story, like as a fictional book, cause it's fun to follow along what Meridian goes through and the adventure there. And then obviously as someone like me who loves coaching and loves learning and loves performance, from that side of it, like you brought some of these concepts that we've spent an hour talking about on a podcast episode, you brought them to life in a practical, applicable way. So I should have said this at the top, but the book is awesome. It's really cool. And I can't wait till people get to read it. So, yeah, you can just edit that part and put it at the front.
All right, perfect. No, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm really excited to hear what our listeners and our readers think of it, because yeah, I'm proud of it too. At the end of the day, it was a lot of work, but I'm happy kind of taking on that challenge of finding a balance between, you know, telling a good story and weaving some lessons in.
Yeah. I know that was one of the big challenges. Was, I think your wheelhouse is telling the story, and I think you got feedback like, well, less about jousting and, and get to the what's going to help us be better coaches and athletes. But I thought you found a good mix of that.
Yeah. And again, I think if you both like reading in general and like, you know, fiction and stories, and then this book will be awesome for you. If you want like a straight list of the rules and, you know, principles, then this might not be it. But there's a lot in there to get out of. And hopefully, again, by the end, you're not only have learned a lot, but you're also rooting and invested in Meridian's success.
Yeah, people will be. So sorry, back to the questions. I realized I just didn't do justice at the beginning. So I know it's a big concept. I think probably one of the most important concepts in motor learning, this idea of transfer, right? What we do in practice, we want it to transfer to performance. And I think the same thing sometimes in sports psychology. You know, you do this great session off the court, and then you get on the court and, you know, none of it transfers or it doesn't apply. I think that's the challenge of any of this stuff. So I guess what would be your hope in terms of transfer? Like someone reads this book, a coach or a player, what would you want them to take into their training and apply?
Yeah, there's a lot of sections. I would say just on the macro level as a whole, maybe just the player coach relationship that Gowan fosters. He's somebody that I want to train for. Even though he's not rah-rah, like he's patient and understanding, and he pushes her and make, you know, the practices are really, really intense. But at the end of the day, it's all about learning and getting better. Not about, you know, proving how good he is as a coach or how good she is. Like they have that just that mindset of always be improving. So I would just think that. I also think about maybe seeing inside Meridian's head, like competing is hard and it's a messy process. And there's a lot of messy mental things going on too. So just for coaches to have some compassion, patience too, with their athletes who are taking on such hard challenges.
Yeah. I think that's what you did really well. You mix the great concepts, but also the empathy and the challenge of it. It's not all just the, like you said, the Hollywood script of, everything goes perfectly. I think we get a real life experience from the teacher, athlete, performer relationship. And that's why it's so good. So I'm curious, just again, kind of, I guess a big question, but why do you write books?
You know, I think it's because I'm a fan of them and a fan of stories. And I'm influenced by what I read, and I'm inspired to kind of create my own versions of those. And, you know, just like if I hear a really good song I like, it kind of gives me a small inkling of like, hey, I should like write music. But then I realized that, you know, for me, writing books is a lot easier and in my real wheelhouse with my voice, I guess. But I like to think in stories, and I like to think about writing, and I think about stories more than actually like the work of sitting down and writing them. But I think there's also something cool about spending a long time crafting something that only you could create. Like John, you and I, come from similar backgrounds and have a lot of similar experiences throughout our lives. But you know, if you write this book, it's completely different. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I don't know, it's cool being able to put a unique piece of you out in the world. And I hope that it entertains and impacts people the way that the stories that have impacted me have, you know, changed my life.
What do you see the benefits for you? Like, is there, I guess I think of again, like the transfer of like, say no one ever read this book, you know, what would you see as, you know, you going through this exercise of writing out all these ideas, like how does it add to your life?
Yeah. And I would just echo this as a encouragement for anybody else thinking about writing a book or doing anything, tackling any kind of creative pursuit. They say the book you write changes you more than, you know, maybe it changes other people too. And just like journaling, just, you know, how it really gets your thoughts clear. You know, this going over this draft over and over, I think it really paints a clear picture in my mind what some of these concepts are and how I would practically use them. I think also, like, you know, we encourage athletes to coach because you learn a skill a lot once you coach it. I think it's like the exact same thing. Being forced to write about it makes me learn it and know it a lot more.
Yeah, no, I think that I could see that. And I'd imagine some of these concepts will be even stickier for you as you perform and coach and can apply them at a higher level. You talked about stories and how you're always telling them and thinking about them and not always writing them. Do you forecast stories? Like, do you have a story written for your upcoming professional beach season, or do you do that sort of thing? Like, imagine what's ahead?
Maybe not as much as I should. I mean, I have my own dreams, and, you know, I like to picture myself in good places and succeeding. I guess I would, a lot of my forecasting actually might be the more negative side. Like, like, oh, what'll happen if, you know, picturing that and like all the things that could happen. So there's a lot.
Pre-mortem.
Yeah, there you go. What's the worst case scenario here? Yeah, I guess I haven't ever framed it like that. Usually I'm thinking about other people that I have complete control of because I control their world. But yeah, I like the idea of if I was writing myself as a character in my book, what kind of values would I want to have? What kind of character would I want to be? That might be a good way to approach a season.
Yeah. All right. That's my first coaching assignment for this year then for you.
Okay.
I want you to write, it could just be a journal. You're going to write your Hollywood. It doesn't have to be Hollywood. No, your Billy Allen story of the 2022 AVP FIVB season.
Awesome. I think, hopefully I wouldn't be as stubborn as Meridian, the character in this book, but I would be pretty resilient like she is. And no matter what came my way, I'd be able to, you know, joust my way through.
Yeah. And would I be the enemy?
Ah, you'd be my mentor.
We got to come up with a good enemy. I guess
my partner would get hurt and you'd come out of retirement to be my partner. So
I'm getting closer to that. I think I could do it. Give me a month. Is there a chapter you're most proud of? Is there one that you're like, yeah, I nailed it?
It's funny. I think the chapters that were easiest to write are the chapters that I think are the best. I think when I really struggle with something, I have to write it over and over and over. You know, I think you eventually get it to a point where it's good, but there are other chapters that just came like that. And that's when, you know, I don't know if it's like a flow state thing or whatever, just when it feels natural on the writing it, that's the stuff that I think is the best. And two that came to mind, I have kind of an example of maybe the trusting training mindset using like walking along a board. And it's a real short chapter, but basically the idea is she's overthinking her technique a lot and he's trying to get her to get into the trusting mindset rather than just training. And
can you break down the training trusting real fast again?
Yeah. So basically the training mindset would be the mindset you use when you're taking in skills, you're learning something new. Maybe you're working on a technique and you're working on training. All your focus is improving on that skill. And on the flip side, the trusting mindset is the mindset you bring into competition. That's what you want to be playing with. You want to be free. You want to be just, you know, have a clear intention and acting, you know, playing aggressive. So it's less of, hey, in this big game, I'm worried about my shoulder tilt and, you know, what my platform is doing. It's like, oh, I'm passing a target. Like, I got this. And I've spent so much of my early career focusing on just the training mindset. Like, it's always like so focused on how can I get better? How can I improve my technique? Which is great. But at the same time, it's hard to just switch gears out of nowhere in a tournament and have this like killer instinct mentality where it's like, I'm not worried about the small details of what my feet are doing. I'm just trying to put the ball away or whatever. And so the idea is you want to be practicing the trusting mindset in practice so that you're prepared when it comes to competition on how to rely on it and some of the tools to use it. And we go into it in the book a lot. And, you know, like us, Meridian has a hard time maybe understanding it at first. One of the analogies he gives is he sets a wooden board down a long plank and has her walk across. And she thinks that's kind of silly. So she just easily walks across the board. And then he ends up raising it and putting it at the top rafters of this barn and having her do it. And it's obviously a lot harder for her to do. Where at the beginning, she was just walking without even thinking. Now she's worried about her steps and her balance and what her arms are doing. And she's like, you know, threatening to fall off. And he kind of uses that as an example for, you know, at first you didn't care about your technique. You were just getting, all you saw was the other side of the board. And now you're working and thinking about how do I, you know, take a step. And in competition, We don't want to be thinking about how do I take a step? How do I walk? We want to be just thinking about our goal and our, maybe our external focus and the end line there. And so he said, admits that, hey, it's a lot harder to do when it's up there, but you know, your goal by practicing this is to make it feel the same way, whether you're on the ground or whether you're up there. And that's, you know, easier said than done, but maybe shows a picture for her of what it looks like to fully trust and not be worried so much about, you know, the little things and technique.
Yeah, that was a great chapter. Definitely a standout. I think I've in all your books, the Good Blood and Dark Blood and this one, I have these moments where, you know, you get wrapped up in the story and you're all into it. And then I'll just have this like aha, or not aha, but just like a realization. It's like, wait, this was in Billy's head. Billy wrote this? What? Like, yeah. I get out of the story and I just go, how did Billy come up with this? It's a weird feeling to like know you so well, and but then to like be like so sucked into your world. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I would just say, like, with anybody trying to do something creative, a lot of it's the iteration, like, you know, just working at it over and over and over, because, you know, your first draft doesn't have a lot of great ideas. But the more you keep at it, you can start, you know, shining it and making it better.
Same as developing skills on the court, you know, just put out a crappy first draft, right? And then
yep.
Try to make a little less crappy one on the second serve receive attempt.
Always be getting better.
So this is I like hypotheticals, as I've asked you many through the years. This is a very serious hypothetical I need you to think about for a while here. So if you could choose any career for the rest of your life, so this is, yeah, you can do it until you die.
Mm.
Would you rather be a professional beach volleyball player, professional author, Bob Dylan's roadie, and let's say Bob Dylan never dies.
He lives forever.
He lives forever. Or a stay-at-home dad and Ketch never grows up. And why?
Okay. So I know enough about Bob Dylan to know I would never want that job.
You get to watch him play every night.
As much as I love his music and his, he's a little bit of a pill. Yeah, right. As is Ketch. So those okay. two are off the table. Wow.
Dylan and Ketch. At least Ketch is in good company.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Now I would do writing. I think at this stage, I've done volleyball my whole life. And it's a, I mean, you didn't give me the hypothetical that my body would never feel any pain or lose any more jumps. So, I know I'm really passionate and fired up on this writing. And I think kind of like how you were shifting gears into coaching and it became this like, being torn two ways. Like I definitely feel that, luckily for me, I don't have to make that decision because writing pays me nothing right now.
Wait till this book though. Watch out.
Yeah. No, but I would love to keep getting better. And like you said, whether people are reading it or not, keep releasing books and improving my craft.
Well, I'm excited to continue reading and following along. And again, I think this book's going to take off. I hope people really spread the word and get it out to fellow coaches and teams. Cause again, one, it's going to be enjoyable. It's not going to feel like homework for your athletes. It's going to be like, oh, this is fun. Like that. Thanks for letting me read this. And then two, you're going to be able to transfer the fun lessons and the meaningful lessons into your training. It's my last question. Any plans for an audiobook? Any movie plans?
No movie, but I'm definitely going to do an audiobook. I just need to find a female professional narrator.
Ooh.
I don't know about the Scottish accent. We'll see. But no, I think this would be really good for audiobook. So I'll, you know, if I sell enough copies, then I can afford to pay a narrator.
Cool. Well, when's the release date?
By the time this is out, it'll be out. You guys, please check out Amazon, The Inner Knight. I'd love for you to read it and leave a review if you like it.
No, it's a great book. I can't wait for people to read it. This was fun. Thanks, Billy.
Thanks for listening. And I hope you check out The Inner Knight. If you want to order it for your team, just reach out to me for a discount on bulk orders. That info and links to the book will be in the show notes. I'm excited for you to read it, and I can't wait to hear what you think.